Okay, well, it's Thursday, May 16th, 2019. At 9 a.m., we have a county administration workshop for the Board of County Commissioners in the conference room. I do want to shuffle the agenda a bit and move item 3 up to number 1, which is Board Business, Oregon Housing Community Services, OHCS, Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG, update for 2019 through 21. Mm-hmm. Ms. Wessels, do you want to come up?
Absolutely. Okay, so thank you for having me today. This is a activity that we get together on every biennium. And Oregon Housing and Community Services is a funding grantor to United Community Action Network. We are the community action agency that is federally designated for this Josephine County. We also serve Douglas County. What I'm coming to you to talk about today is that we have a procedural item that needs to be done when we send our work plans annually and when we report on our work plans on a biennial basis. We are required to provide you with information about what we're doing so that you can say, yes, I acknowledge that this is occurring in my community. So the document you have before you is a form that was given from Oregon Housing and Community Services, from their Housing and Homeless Services Department and Division. It says that it is related to ESG. ESG is a funding source that's been around quite a long time. It's very much in alignment with other housing and homeless services. And it really deals with two conditions. It deals with the activities that we do within rapid rehousing, which is to get people that are not housed properly to be housed and to provide them supportive services. And then the secondary piece is for housing prevention, so to keep people housed and hopefully back off of a bad row. So those are the two programs that we deal with. I got some information on data just so you know where we went in the last biennium. We served overall 428 households, and that was overall as far as keeping people housed and stabilized. And that in ESG alone, we were working with 67 households in both rapid and housing prevention. In those particular, also we do some additional services with the funding that we receive in ESG. We support other entities that are working on the same issue. So ESG has a component for outreach and targeted services. And so in order to keep Hearts with a Mission operating with unaccompanied youth, helping Maslow Project do their activities, helping Joe's Place do their activities. In the past 2 years, we have provided funding at various levels in order for them to be able to operate and do for our unaccompanied youth through that continuum.
Sounds good. Just out there doing the best you can.
Absolutely.
That's what you have.
Yep. We have currently in Housing and Homeless Services, in this county, and it is very unusual because across the state you will not see this in a community action agency, we have 27 different revenue sources that are targeted to different populations and general population. We have funding through CDBG that helps in the city of Grants Pass to support eviction prevention, that also supports people that are not necessarily low income and who have a foreclosure issue. So there is moderate income that can be served in some of our programs. So we're really stretching our continuum to make sure that we preserve people who are working in our community, who want to continue to be working in our community and live here and contribute, to not lose their status, because the housing crisis is going to take a collective to fix. But for those things that we can intervene on to preserve for people of all different walks of life, and to house those who are in need of permanent supportive housing, we are there to fulfill that obligation.
Okay. How are things trending with the economy picking up? Are you getting less coming through your door, or is it still?
We're very steady. We're steady, and we are. We're steady because we don't have additional units.
Right.
So when you preserve someone in place, then that unit's not going to turn over, correct? We have other single-family dwellings that are turning over seasonally. This time of year is very common for individuals to put rentals up for sale to see to test the market. So individuals, when that happens, they receive notice. And so this is something that, you know, if it sells, then that person's going to be displaced. And that's not necessarily to any fault of their own. It just happens to be that the unit sold. It's a business piece. But because we don't have a lot of, we have very little multifamily, that makes it very challenging. And we are, our rent burden here is so high. So that's the other issue, is that we are listed in the state as one of the top two, as I reflect from the Housing Advisory Council meeting, of the most rent-burdened areas in the state of Oregon. And that means that that we're paying well over the 30% that is estimated that most people should be paying for housing.
Yeah, we make a couple of those lists that are not very...
We do, but we also have some movement in the community, and one of the things that I try to emphasize is that some of the targets for population for the state, we do very well with. Unaccompanied youth, we have as a community, we are really looking at how to do those strategies, and there are several entities that are working on that, which I think is important. McKinney-Vento, through both school districts, are working with us very intentionally and proactively so that we make sure that children that are affected are less impacted and receive the wraparound services that they need from professionals while the adults come to me and get worked with, so that we're strategizing both sides of the household. So I think that that's important. And also, as a community, one thing that I think we should be proud of is that most of the human service providers work very well with our CCOs, and that we see housing as a health issue, and that it is a part of how we will make this a healthy community is if we start really attacking the issue of providing housing for all different types of people. We look at workforce housing, we look at permanent supportive housing, we look at the potential for safety net housing, all of it, and that's a good thing. You know, we're fortunate that we still talk to each other. There's lots of communities that don't.
Right.
So my request in this is to have the acknowledgement that we did this activity, and that at any time I offer that if there's any time that you need information from me, I am more than happy to provide it. We have several data collection systems that we use in order to be able to tell you where we are in real time.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I heard the other day just a rumor that the city of Grants Pass is getting ready to pass a deal that they will issue no more single family housing permits. It's all got to be multiple. That's just a rumor, I'm sure it is.
No, I have not heard that, the Housing Advisory Council hasn't heard that.
Is there anything being done on changing codes? Because one of the things that back to Valerie Lovelace, her husband, they've been in the apartment
Absolutely.
House building industry for a long time. $240,000, $220,000 to $240,000 to build an apartment per apartment. That's $250,000 to build an apartment, which should be somewhere. I think, you know, just being stick-framed and whatnot, and you're all sharing plumbing and you're all sharing, it should be considerably cheaper than that, but it's not because of all the codes and things that are piled on top of it, requirements that we have to have in those housing. Is there anything being done on that? We've talked a number of times here about what is basic housing. You know, I want to be, I'm wet and I want to be dry, and my family's cold and I want them to be warm, but I don't need a heat pump, and I don't need a electric charging station in a heated subterranean garage and all the stuff that seems to be tied onto a conventional home, that you will have this, you will have that, you will have that. Drives the cost of it up, therefore there are people, you know, we don't build as many housing units as we probably should. Because there's no such thing as a shelter housing category.
They don't, and the only thing that's currently penciling, essentially, is single family dwellings. So,
but I mean, from your organization,
yeah.
Though, I would like to see some pressure saying, okay, we need a shelter housing type of a category. If we're going to build new houses, we're relying on rentals, I'm assuming, just like you went through the
always.
Rental thing, which is, I mean, that's fact, that you run out of rentals, and there just isn't rentals, and
there
they
is
sell
what,
them, and they,
yes,
you know, and
finite amount.
Down, and so on and so forth. But somewhere along the line that somebody would lobby to say, hey, we need more housing, and it needs, and if it from has to be from the new sector, then we need a basic, very basic house that somebody can live in, or duplex, or triplex, or fourplex.
We have had discussions with that. My organization has... in Douglas County, UCannon owns and operates 92 units of housing.
Oh, okay.
And lots of different types. We do transitional, we do permanent supportive, we have alcohol and drug-free housing, we have all different kinds.
Okay.
And so we are working on that.
And then does the state, you get quite a bit of money from the state? I know this is important.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and another
there's room. Pass-through and direct.
Another rumor that I heard is that in order to clean up Cortland streets, they're going to move them all down to the rural counties. They're just going to say, well, we're giving a lot of resources down into the Josephine, Jackson, Klamath County areas. So, you know, when you're Portland, you say, we're out of resources up here, this is where you need to go.
No.
Because
no.
I see more and more and more and more people coming off of I-5 with the backpack and just walking into Grants Pass. Like, somewhere along the line, somebody told them this was an easy mark or whatever.
Visually, you may, part of the reason that things are more visual is because there's less places for people to be. A lot of the individuals that you see, and I see them too when I get up, I live in Merlin and things like that, can't help. A lot of them actually have just been existing in backwood areas, and they are now not able to really be there anymore. It's a little more hostile environment. That's one issue related to it. We have very restrictive codes in the City of Grants Pass as to what we can do, as you both know. There is discussion on how we could remedy that. I have some ideas on what I'd like to do in some work out in the county where we can do some transportation. We could pay for transportation routes and things in order to set up services in an area that's less dense like this, and do some real effective services with supportive shelter. There are a lot of models out there. What I'm not interested in getting into is anything that is does not meet the criteria of habitability, and that means things like wooden tents and those kinds of things. Those are not habitable, and therefore agencies such as myself cannot fund and try to make them better because they are prohibited by HUD.
Thicker canvas?
So there are a lot of other models out there. I have not known anything to come to Southern Oregon, and the reason being is because actually we have other things on the books that make it less palatable for people to be here at all when there is no shelter or day center. And I'm watching people, the majority of people that I'm dealing with right now on the street have accessibility issues, who are medically fragile, terminal. I'm dealing with that population right now, which are very visible because they have nowhere to mobile to. They're just there. Now, I'm not speaking of younger individuals in the sense that you may see as seasonally transitory. I'm really talking about those that have lived here a decade, 15 years, who have family here, who are existing on the streets in that condition. Those are the ones that right now we're trying to keep from dying on the street, quite frankly.
Then that leads me into my final question. What's the difference between Oregon and Oklahoma, Tennessee, North Carolina? Because I just took a trip for 2 weeks across the center stretch of America in Oklahoma City, which is big. We went downtown, we went all over Oklahoma City. I saw one homeless person sleeping on a park bench.
Mm-hmm.
One. I didn't see any transients. I didn't see any, sleeping bag with a dog and a bicycle and a shopping cart. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And in Charlotte, North Carolina, I saw two guys working a median strip, but they didn't have a cardboard sign and a gas can, and I'm helpless and I need help and everything. They were passing out leaflets for a church service that they had at a little Baptist church right down the road, and they were doing that, handing those out as a flyer. But other than that, I didn't see anything. Is there something that they're doing and saying, we have it, but it's in a huge homeless camp out at milepost 4.3. Is that what they're doing that's different?
No.
Because I can't say that they don't have it.
No, they are doing some different models.
See it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big issue we have around here is no matter how much money and time and effort and all your efforts to throw at getting the people off the street, I still have them sleeping out here on the lawn. And I don't know why.
So there's two things that I can speak to, and I actually I can't speak to Tennessee, but I can speak to North Carolina and Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
First off, you do actually have to have places for people to go.
Right.
You have to establish those. And there is a continuum. So when you speak of continuum of care, there is a term called COC, which we are part of the balance of state in the state of Oregon. It's called OR 505. Balance of state is every county in the state of Oregon under HUD that is not its own COC. So Jackson County accesses its own COC. They are a one county.
What's COC again?
Continuum of care. And that has to do with HUD and housing. Within the COCs, and specifically in Oklahoma, they have two incredibly robust systems through all of their municipalities and their state mobilization to make sure that their coordinated entry, which is where when you come in and you have a housing need or you're homeless, you are immediately triage scored through a score that then ranks you to where you should be connected to. So if you score for emergency shelter, there's a bed available for you right then. If you score for permanent supportive housing, you are diverted to permanent supportive housing, and here's the provider, and here's the bed that's going to be attached to that. They have very robust systems. It is coordinated entry in the state of Oregon. The northern part is metropolitan areas is better. But in communities like ours, you actually have to have places for people to go in order to make coordinated entry work.
And your clientele has to want to do that, because I see a tremendous amount of people out here that they're not interested in getting into anybody's program. They really don't like, why do you live sleeping in a cardboard box? I guess that's why I like it.
So, and I think what that goes to is when annually we do our point in time count, there is a question on there that indicates if it's by choice.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, it has been within one or two individuals for the last 5 years. There is about 27 that answer by choice. Everyone else on our count does not choose that.
But do they even show up for your count? That's what
yes. Of all the people that are counted.
Of all the people that show up for your
count.
County,
27. This also, you can go, this is actually was tested by Grants Pass Department of Public Safety for all the same ones that you and I visually see.
Okay.
And so I think that, and it's nice that it lines up that way, because I think that it's not just me saying it. Let me go to North Carolina for a second, because that's another model that's really important to remember. North Carolina has deployed efforts on addressing poverty rather than just addressing homelessness. They have looked at economic development differently,
okay. And
they have also created what is now being tested as an evidence-based model on a five-year process of moving individual households from their status out of poverty. And they're cutting edge.
Okay.
So that may be part of what you're seeing.
Right. Okay.
And that would be great.
I apologize.
No, it's Karen, good. It's,
but
no.
I
we learned.
But getting back to your thing here, I'm in favor.
Thank you.
I don't know if we need a motion.
Right. Do you need a signature or what?
She has the prepared document for you. It needs to be on your letterhead.
Okay.
And so if you...
Then she'll take care of it.
And then she'll take there and sign it. And it can be scanned to me and we're all good.
Okay.
Anytime you want questions answered, please feel free.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
And for the hard work.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you.
Take care.
Take care, Kelly. All right. Well, let's look back to the original agenda. Item one is Department Business Veterans, Lisa Pickert, reclassification of four positions. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Darren?
Doing fine. Thanks.
So I'm bringing this to the board today. We have a tiered positions kind of status in our office. We have also at the lower end, we have a 0.5 assistant, department assistant at an A07, I believe. That position, now that we have four service officers, that position is incredibly busy. First, we'd like to move her to a department specialist at an A10 rate at a full-time position, correct?
And the rationale for that is the job duties have expanded with the expansion of the office. Department assistant basically is a receptionist, answers phone, does that kind of work. With the expanded workload and the expansion of the department, it's doing more comprehensive work, and so it warrants the department specialist job title instead of assistant.
Right. So that's one change. Our two in the middle, our VSO1 and VSO2 positions, the individuals that are in there now, the VSO2 is for an accredited service officer. We have one that's just now becoming accredited. She's our fourth and final one so far, well, to date. They're A11 and A12 positions. We're just going to move those to A12 and A13 positions. But the biggest change is the lead position. We're adding a lead VSO position. We have a lead down there that's been taking on some supervisory responsibilities, the training, overseeing the office when I'm out doing increasing our outreach program. So we're looking to change her from an A12 to an A15 lead supervisory position. Job descriptions are in there, and it's kind of bringing them up to competitive market, really.
So I did a way study on VSOs, and based on that, I'm recommending a one-range increase. The addition of the lead primarily is, as her program has expanded, she's out of the office more, and having a lead who can direct day-to-day operations is a structural a system that will be more effective in keeping the highest level productivity in the department.
Yeah.
Does it change your hours of operation?
Does not change our hours of operation. Does not.
Nope. And have you moved to your new location yet?
I moved equipment over there yesterday.
So it's happening the day before.
Yeah, so it's happening. We practiced in there on Tuesday. The DD-214s were in awe, to say the least. Very grateful and thankful. Our other outreach program is going to bring them in. I actually have an update next Tuesday for you guys as well. And so you're going to be able to see everything we're doing out
in
the community.
Thanks for the tease.
Come back next week.
The room is amazing. We're putting together our furniture over there. We're getting it all together.
Yeah, so. External signage coming?
You know, we have one of the original old Josephine County signs I've been dragging around with me. It was actually on the highway at the old Fruitdale Grange building when we were out there. And it's this metal sign. I think P-Dub put it together. P-Dub put it together, and I've carried it around. So we might put that on the outside just for nostalgic purposes. But we will be putting some signage in the windows. And we will, yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I've had the DVOP, who works for the state. So it's a disabled veterans employment gentleman. wants to do outreach there. We have somebody now from the Vet Center that wants to come over and work with the music group. He's in LCSW now at the Vet Center. He wants to come over and work with the music group. And we also have the individual for the state.
What kind of instruments do they play?
He plays the guitar. He was amazed with our group about 15 years ago, and he has gone through the system, worked for down at White City. He got his PhD, and he now has his job of choice at the Vet Center. And so then I just heard yesterday, he's like, yeah, at least I want to come over and start playing with your group. It's been like 10 years. I said, yeah, come on in. So
that's cool.
We'll be opening it up at nighttime. Maybe it's going to be a Wednesday night, but we'll be opening it up Wednesday nights for kind of like open mic for the younger kids. So the captured audience that we really intended were for all the younger guys that were deploying and that were starting families. The problem is they can't. They need a time frame to practice outside of work hours. And so I have handfuls of them that want to play, but we practice during the day. So we're going to do a special nighttime deal for the younger guys, and I have probably 8 of them coming on in. So, and people want to come and do outreach there and work with the veterans with, you know, bringing, and that'll help bring in other veterans to the facility.
Very good.
Just to make my life more busy. Anyway,
we can pass this today or move it on to the weekly business session.
I don't know what we have to do.
Just have to make a motion to approve the reclassing of all.
I make the motion that we approve item 1A, the reclassification of 4 positions in the Veterans Service Office, as noted.
And I'll second that motion. Any further discussion?
Oh, BSO brought all that to me. I've seen all this before. So
sure.
Just to let you know, the liaison has been kept in the loop.
Love it.
These changes are within her existing budget as well.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
Well, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And aye. So the motion carries, and you have approval.
Thank you.
Go forward and do good work. Thank you.
May the force be with you.
That's right. I love it. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Item B is a request for job description change in public health.
So this is, we used to have this position in the past. Public health got a grant to bring it back, but they wanted to revise the job description before we post it. The actual grant has already been taken to the board and approved. It just needs a job description update.
It's a grant just for 1 year, so in other words, we're going to open this up, this job description up, hire this person, or change somebody's level, and then next year we can't afford them, and we're going to have to drop it back again.
Well, they believe it'll be an ongoing grant.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, grants are always inherently they could say no, but they believe it'll be an ongoing position that'll have some longevity. I hate doing that. Hey, let's hire you for 6 months and kick you.
Okay, well that's why we don't want to get started with anything because we get a grant. Oh boy, now we can hire this person, and then at the end of it, we don't want to build a jail and then not be able to staff it.
100% agree. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So this would be okay. You would have a continuation of that job description going forward.
Yeah, and it's a program we used to have, and it's a position.
What is it?
It's a Healthy Start worker within the Healthy Start program. It's a federal grant.
Describe what a Healthy Start program is.
So there.
Cereals in the morning.
So someone that coordinates with our WIC clients. So young children and families to really address some specific health criteria. So there's a list of things that they are working with, and they're basically a coordinator of services. So someone comes in and they do assessments on well-being at home, food well-being, psychological well-being, and then they can refer those folks to the various county programs that can help them with those things. So that's basically what it does.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do we have to?
I just need verbal approval. It's for a job description update. That doesn't have
to
be Wednesday.
Is a motion required for that?
You don't even need a motion. Just a general consensus is fine for these things.
I have no problem.
So do you agree? I agree. Let's both agree. And you go forward.
Okay, thank you.
Item two is a request for an evaluation form change, and our chair, Commissioner Morgan, asked for this to be tabled and thrown on.
There's no reason it has to be done today. If one of the commissioners wants to comment on it and weigh in, I don't see any reason to not have
so
to
So can
happen.
We just move that
well,
forward?
Well, I'd like her then. In the room because I think she's the one that brought this thing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a different thing that she was talking about.
Okay.
But it, you know, she sent an email and said she has some feedback, and I see no reason not to let her have that feedback.
Okay, so let's table item two under B.
Put it away today, then that's okay. We can.
I don't have. There's no rush to do it today.
Honor your request. Your request, your recommendation is to wait.
Yeah, there's no rush on that.
No rush. Okay.
That's all.
Well, then so be it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Item C is Public Works order.
PW, right?
PW.
Saving time.
2019-034 in the matter of acceptance of the extension of Ridgefield Road as a county maintained road.
Where's Ridgefield?
Ridgefield
General
is.
General direction.
Yeah.
Rogue River Highway.
And?
Williams Highway.
No, Williams Highway.
Rogue River Highway.
Well, we've got consensus on
you. You're right.
This is really.
You want to go back outside and figure it out?
That's fine. Good morning.
Williams Highway.
Williams Highway.
Hey, Rob, I got a map here for you.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I'm off.
It's early in the morning.
The maps is Williams Highway.
So, effectively, this is an extension of an existing road, all of about 460 feet. I was surprised. Google Earth actually had it on there this morning. So, it's the obviously the new nice black stretch there.
This part.
Yeah, and really the only matter of contention was you can see it popped off a cul-de-sac, and there was initially a concern about the turnaround there. Would folks drive right on through that, either remove the existing asphalt or put up stops? But there's enough clearance there and everything else. It would just be just drive on straight through.
Williams Highway.
So you basically got the market right there at the big turn.
Okay,
yeah.
This is Century Market, Murphy Creek Road,
so
going up to the high school.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Okay, this is down not quite to. Okay, I think I know where that is.
Yeah, and this one went to appeal.
What is it joined up to? Is this going to be a new subdivision up in here, Platt or anything?
There's a handful of lots down there.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a new PUD.
Is this all developed? I mean, is that where the asphalt's going to stop? Is right there?
Yep, that's
and then the developer has to do that.
Yep,
is this already platted and whatnot?
Yeah,
you know
it's already platted, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
And I want to see there's five lots coming off. Yeah.
I have a loaded question.
Loaded up.
Right?
Why isn't this done right now? Because the guy is some time down the future going to do that. Why are not we making him do all of this right now at his expense before he's even sold a lot like we were on North Applegate Road?
Because once it's outside the right-of-way, that's not our concern.
That one is a PUD, so he's allowed to. That road is built to a private road standard.
Okay, so we're going to, this was private road and we're bringing that into our road system?
That was added, so that 460 feet will be publicly maintained, but basically that cul-de-sac is the end of
our
maintenance.
Can I ask a question? Why are, because constantly heard we don't build roads in Josephine County.
Right, we didn't build it, they built it, we accept it.
They built it
to our standards. And
then
we
they're going to pay that?
Say that again.
That's already paid.
That's already paid. And they paid for that?
Yep. We don't. We always
okay, so
basically.
All we're doing is bringing it in.
Accepted.
The only thing we have into
okay.
it is basically
got
our
it, got
our
it.
Inspector's time out there. Yep.
Yeah, you
got
go it. And check it out and see
yep.
if it's good. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, one tenth of a mile into inventory, so it's fairly low for.
Well, and this one's planned to move forward to the consent calendar of next week's business session. So
okay.
See no reason not to move that one forward. Forward.
Okay.
Item two
just so
is.
Just guys in trouble, right? I'm supposed to actually give you more than one copy if it goes into the record.
Yeah, you hang on to that.
I'll bring it.
We have our own picture.
Yes, I just thought that was kind of hot. That's
better.
Hot off the presses. Yeah, Google Earth got it.
That is hot.
All right.
Yeah, second one is the matter of reconstruction of the intersection to jump off Joe Creek Road and Winona Road.
Yeah, and I'll kind of talk about these two as a package deal because obviously it's the next item that triggered this.
Right.
So these culverts were both identified on our culvert inspection, and I. Here's a list, just so you have a kind of a sense of what we're talking about. These are all culverts that we rate in the 4 or 5 category, 5 being about to fall in, 4 being not far behind. So, and these are all culverts of 36 inches diameter or larger, 30 of the small ones. So, I mean, you can see we had 93 at the time. So, this is kind of what I've been talking about the last year or two, is that we need to start attacking this list more aggressively. Now that we've got a bit more funding, thanks to the 17 funding bill, that's what we're doing. So, these two culverts... Winona is a 4 on that list, and Jump Off Joe is a 4 also. they're a drag because they do create a long detour. As you can see from the map, there's just not an easy way around that. If you theoretically, worst case, if you had somebody going from one edge of Winona having to go all the way around to see their neighbor on the other side, it's like 17 miles. The more likely detour would be somebody coming from Grants Pass that usually would come home, you know, on the south end there, now has to go up over the top of Jump Off Joe. So you're probably talking still an additional 7 or 8 miles. It's a big inconvenience. We recognize that. The alternative, yeah, it fails, and here we are.
What's the estimated duration?
So the contract calls for anything less than 10 days, they bonus.
14 days.
And oh. They will bonus $1,500 a day, $1,000 a day.
$1,000 a day.
Our assumption is they'll probably jump on a Monday and get it done by Friday or a Saturday. And
right.
Start after school.
And take that $5,000 and run with it.
Yep. And
that helps.
Start after school gets out. Again, it's a drag. We recognize it. But bonusing contractors is a better inducement than if you don't get it done by X date, we're going to ding you with.
Well, we do have liquidated damages, too.
We just don't want to
get
to that.
After 14 days, it's a $1,600 penalty each day.
Yeah. But it sounds like a proper load.
Yeah.
Give them enough time. And
I mean, they'll get it done probably 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
For each culvert.
There's going to be.
We're not going to close them each at the same time.
Right. So we don't landlock people in that 2 miles in between. That'd be really exciting.
Well, two and three are dumped together, right?
Right. The signage is going to be pretty aggressive on that southern end, especially getting through Colonial Valley, through Lloyd Drive, Soldier Creek, and all that. Signs are built, though, and we'll obviously do our usual blast to the media and everybody else to say, hey, be aware. You know,
I was going
to
say, make sure you put it in the courier.
Yeah, don't. Yeah. Leave yourself extra time if you're going that route because it will take a bit longer.
In the courier?
Well, we need to properly notice.
We'll do our usual, punch.
One of the things that
we have to do. Generally, we do a media release 2 weeks ahead. We'll do a media release like the day before, 48 hours in advance.
So we have a neighborhood reader board.
Yep, we got a portable changeable message sign.
That might be an idea.
Yeah.
Reward this. You know.
We're actually looking at just doing a mass mailing list, too, of just a card to the area out there.
Don't want to be inconvenient, Jim, but make sure your tank is full of gas.
Yeah. Basically. Basically.
No parking on the shoulder.
And then not to be lost in this, there is a third culvert up on Bridge Lane there, just south of Wolf Creek. That's same idea. It's large and it's in bad shape. These culverts are all going to be upsized significantly just because that's what the new, not only fish passage, but hydrology shows. So most of them are doubling in size or so.
Are you putting metal ones in?
Yeah, they'll all be. Yeah. This is an interesting picture of kind of the Jump Off Joe. That one's actually in not bad shape, but the entire haunch is failing. Can see it's probably puckered in 18 inches there, and it's about 10 feet long. I want to say that bulge is it's substantial. So so it goes back to the other two are in horrendous shape. Bridge Lane is completely gone on the bottom, and the other one on I guess it's Winona. You know, you've got your silver dollars in the bottom, so they're all three at the end of their usable life, unfortunately.
And the new ones will last how long?
I don't know.
60 years.
Yeah, that's the typical thing.
ODOT is moving longer towards salting roads.
Mm-hmm.
And also, contrary to what I'm told, I can never find out what's in de-icer, but from what I'm talking to the trucking industry, that de-icer just tears up aluminum wheels and anodized wheels and truck frames and so on and so forth. But it's non-caustic.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-corrosive, and I can't believe that two can't be in the same piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want us to be cautious when you put it in a metal culvert. I'm not saying go to plastic or composite or whatever, because that's going to be mostly just runoff and fresh water going through these.
Mm-hmm.
But as we consider salting roads, and the states as well, we're going to salt roads, I don't think they're taking into consideration what happens to our culverts, like the one up there on Hawthorne, something rotted the bottom of that out. And the rest of the culvert was fine, except for the bottom where the water lays year round.
Mm-hmm.
And it rotted the whole bottom of it as well. It's acidic soil, but the rest of the culvert was just fine. So I want us to be aware and cognizant of what we're doing. And of course, I don't care what you put in the ground, it's going to have a shelf life.
Right.
It's going to have a useful life. That one that's bulging in is probably how old?
That one's actually only, we're thinking, probably 40 years old. I don't know if that was...
Well, that's 40.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. The rest of it's in really good shape, unfortunately, but the other ones, they're typically dating to the 60s,
right.
So they've got 60 years on them anyway.
Right.
No, it's a good point. I have not seen a lot of studies showing what salt does to culverts. I'm guessing there's probably not enough life. I don't know when they started salting roads. It's been for quite a while, but is there a good comparison of salted versus don't know. Hopefully in those times, it's a big storm event. It's really diluted by the time it gets to those culverts anyway.
Washed out of there. But.
Right. These days, the culverts have an aluminized coating to them, so hopefully we'll get a longer lifespan.
Well, like the one up there on the Hawthorne, I believe that was galvanized or aluminum or something.
Yeah, I think it was galvanized.
Galvanized, so you go through that pin.
But still, it could have been something off of the the freeway or whatever.
Every nick could start,
And my concern is that when they replaced all of that, complete disregard of what actually rotted it out, no investigation into that, the thing that bothers me is they go down and dump it right into Gilbert Creek again. And then I am not allowed to remove a dandelion, that I can't go down and do anything in Gilbert Creek, and yet we can go ahead and dump whatever comes off the street into it as a fish-bearing stream. I can't.
Right.
But government can. That rails on me a little bit.
Right. Stay tuned for the new stormwater impact fee, so that'll address some of that.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll be money going down through that. I'll net that out.
Right.
It'll be money.
They're doing something in Gilbert Creek, too, because they got the little flags out. I think we kind of talked about a rechannelization of that, going back to find out what the original channel was. I think that might be part of that study. I tried to encourage them, after we did the rechannelization up by the schools, the next thing is an upstream of the infrastructure we put in when we were on city council, of the Savage Street Bridge.
Yep.
Don't let the crap above that ruin what you just did as far as your fish ladder and all that other stuff. So I think they may have a project where they were talking to watershed people a couple times. As a neighborhood, and we have like four houses that the bank is washing away because now the stream is going like this,
Doing what streams do, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it. So I think that's a little flag number. I can't prove it.
All right. Okay. For Wednesday, I'll go ahead and we can get it up on the map like this if there's questions, and then we could actually move around to
make
where.
Make sure your maps are clear so they can see.
And that's the tough part with this one, it's just so dang big to get the whole route on there, but yeah, we'll get it up on screen too.
Okay.
All right.
And then I just want to add, Bob Noyes has ran all the addresses adjacent and the address off this or abutting these roads and all the tributaries. So we'll be postcarding everybody.
Postcards to all of them, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. He can just grab he can grab a radius and then it just dumps it into Excel and burps out address files pretty slick.
So when I go out Williams Highway by Jane's Drive, ODOT put in a bunch of culverts when they realigned that a bit. Mm-hmm. And they have big concrete anchors at either end. Are they metal pipes underneath?
Yeah.
And they're just doing a footing at either end?
A collar on either end there, yeah. And they kind of have that six box slap there to keep the big stuff getting into it.
To keep the big stuff out.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know if it was metal in between. Or,
I'm not sure. They might have plastic in between on there. So.
Yeah. I think, Adam, the Janes, I think you can see metal. I can't remember. I haven't looked in a while. I
can't remember either, but I just didn't know if we were keeping up
with
the trends and we're not doing something the way we did it 40 years ago.
Right.
Because that's the way we've always done it.
We still
got some pipe.
Those angled collars are for roadside departures, so if you
go
off the road, you're just not going to hit it first.
Traveling around here at the end of the guardrail, you see those big metal things on the end of a guardrail. When Pam and I traveled from Oklahoma all the way to Charlotte, every one of those, we noticed just on the side of us, gosh, what hit that? And at first one, I thought, wow, somebody had to have died in that because it's wadded up from here to Larry with that big plug right on the end of it.
Yep.
Yeah. And every one of them that we came by, 80% of them was wadded up like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they must have a lot of cars leave the road right where that guardrail is.
And that's expensive. Those in-cap packages, I want to say, it's like $4,500 for just the plate and the attack.
Yeah, because now they divert the energy and cushion and all
they're
that.
They're wadded up 15, 20 feet.
We've got a picture somewhere. I don't know if you've seen it where the car hit the end and didn't have that, and the guardrail just shot through the car, just like making sausage. There's 80 feet of guardrail hanging out the back of the car and right through the cabin.
That lawsuit is the one that helped change that.
Yep.
It worked. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Got to hurt.
All right. Sounds good.
We'll
move these things forward to next Wednesday.
Yep. All right.
And you'll be there for a
brief presentation?
Absolutely.
Something that came up last night that's not on the agenda. Can we go over it?
Sure.
Just have a few seconds.
Yeah.
This is about approaches.
Depends on how controversial it is.
Yeah. I just want to give you a preview. I want to update our access management spacing standards to give us more flexibility so they're not so rigid and we can have more exceptions and we can line it up with the planning code a little better. So this came in last night. This is a guy off Rockydale Road, and he wants two driveways. He wants to do a horseshoe driveway, but per our current standards, whatever, he'd need a 600 foot of spacing or whatever, and he only has 275 feet of lot frontage. But then if you look across the street, his neighbor has a horseshoe driveway. So how are we going to say, no, you can't have a horseshoe driveway?
I think we've broached this subject numerous times. There's what we call common sense kicks in, and it's hard to tell this guy, when he goes, wait a minute, I want to show you something.
Right.
It was permitted over there. Why is it permitted for me? And I think we have to kind of, I understand what the premise is that you don't, but what are the odds, and I'm a betting man, okay, what are the odds of everybody going out to the street at the same time trying to get onto the street? Zero. You know, zero. So there's so much staggered traffic out there. I don't see any reason. Of course, you know, and even where we have two flag lots together with a fence down the middle.
Right.
We've gone over that. What are the odds of the two neighbors coming out there and getting in a fist fight about the road rage as to who gets to go first? They go, hey, go ahead, Fred. And Fred goes ahead, and then Jonathan pulls out. So I think there's some common sense has to come in. I'm all for anything you want to do with this. I'm not going to use the 650 feet that I think we came up with a national road standard or the international driving school and all that other stuff. All right, interesting. Okay. I think common sense, Josephine County, needs to prevail.
Yeah, and I think
safety being first,
distance from intersections is totally realistic.
That's a different deal.
So if you look, this is just a preview, so I'm going to try to bring this before you to get more flexible standards adopted. This one is what I'm proposing, and this is what's existing. So I can pull these numbers right out of the national books. And then the numbers are a little bit, they fall in between these two existing spacing standards. But then if you look at all these bullets, we have exceptions to the rule where they can have a non-conforming driveway, depending on the road classification. And like access on a local or a local road or a residential road, I'm not too concerned about access spacing on those roads. But this would tell me I'd have to have, you know, 500 feet on a dead-end cul-de-sac road. Who cares?
Right.
But then as we get, you know, further and further in our...
I think a lot of things, when you get onto this in the international whatnot, I think one thing, consideration needs to be taken, and this is the boots on the ground and the inspector in the field. If you're on a blind corner, don't let somebody put them, and they'll notice that. You're the guy, I'll put my, I'll put it right here. Come here, let's stand out here in the road, see what you're going to look at every time you pull up there. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And for reasons, I can't do that. You know that.
The devil's in the detail. We don't want to give up all of our negotiating. No. Our first stance is always going to be with those two neighbors. Say, hey, have you guys thought about combining your driveway? Because that's better. I mean, if they can both agree to doing it, cool. But yeah, it gives us enough flexibility to say, all right, if you guys can't agree to a reasonable, you know, easy solution, we've got some.
I think we've had that in the. I think we brought it up at one of the meetings when you have a combined driveway and an agreement, a maintenance agreement, then all of a sudden, Fred, his daughter and three kids move in, and they've all got little lowrider pickups, and they're up and down the driveway wearing it out, and Martha and I only go to town once a month for groceries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to pay that. Then the dispute begins, and then it does come either to civil or to us, and that's where we get in trouble. So,
well, it shouldn't come to us. If they've got an actual agreement, then it's outside the right-of-way.
If they do have agreement, then it should be civil, but I think if we can avoid all that, with some kind of common sense, I'm in all in favor.
Yeah.
Okay, but I also want to document it too, so we have a criteria for.
This first time we've seen this, can I look this over? We look this over?
Yeah, you can
give me a call if you have any questions. Advisory. Yeah, we're not there yet.
I just want your blessing that I'm going to test drive these more flexible standards. So I proofed it. This was the first driveway that came in. Let's proof it against the new exceptions and see how it's working.
And it works in your new exceptions?
If it works out, then we would have to have you adopt it formally into our road standards and
sure.
change.
All right, okay.
Let's
look just over. I'm favorable towards that.
Me too.
I think that's what we've asked for a couple times, and I'm glad to see it moving forward because, you know, we don't want to have appeals against you all and some guy coming in with regular common sense stuff, and we go, no, we've got laws against that.
But then I also want to say, like, hey, you allowed this guy to have a second approach. Why can't I? And I can point to the criteria. Well, this is why. His fell under this category, and yours has fallen under this category.
Yeah.
Well, and eventually some just grandfather in, too.
Right.
Standards are what they are.
Right. Yes, there's probably hundreds of driveways out there now.
Non-conforming.
Yeah, they're in. So
what's this? are these tomato plants out there?
Absolutely.
Yeah, azaleas.
It's kind of a structured deal.
Those tomatoes cost $1,100 a pound.
He's growing 12.
This guy should cut.
They really like tomatoes.
That's great.
All right,
thank you.
Well, I guess that's enough for this meeting. Should we call it, or should we invite Larry up? All right, we'll go one more.
Make sure that Larry, we got to remind you that we all have
a
webinar.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really worried coming in. It's still got a lot of work.
You
got
to
go get a refill on your coffee.
Right.
Right, it's that kind of meeting. It's a refill style meeting.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. This
Thanks
is
for being
be
patient, sir.
Big, long, extensive discussion on this item here. But then I have another matter for commissioners I want to bring up. So
oh, sure. We'll
discuss. That'll take up the rest of my time.
So item D is an MOU granting consent for the Josephine County Airport boosters to use the county's name.
Yes. And I have constructed this memorandum of understanding and brought it to you. I've had it reviewed by legal. And I think that the Josephine County Airport boosters would be a good thing. I've been working on establishing an airport boosters organization for a long time, and we finally have a group of folks who get it and want to participate. So I'm not a part of it. I'm not part of their organization, but I'm encouraging their existence because I think it will be very helpful to the county going forward.
And as liaison, they have come to me and basically laid out what their intentions are. I don't have any
right.
problem with it at all. And, it's going to, it's kind of, oh, I want to liken it to Friends of the Fairgrounds, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, is able to help the fairgrounds with certain projects without going through all the hoops and everything. It's kept local.
Yeah.
And I'm in favor of it. I think it's going to be a good thing. So,
well, these are responsible adults
and
there's an out clause
and they're self-regulated, but they've got a good regulation plan.
Yeah, yeah. And they're doing everything right. I mean, they're organized as a 501c3 and they've incorporated and they've got a board of directors and they're
And so what's the if it's I guess we're not there yet. They want to use the name. We're not really talking about where the money goes yet.
Well, the money is restricted. The money will go only toward the benefit of the airports department and airport projects,
right.
grant match. Or
yeah, like I say, it's kind of like Friends of the Fairgrounds.
Right.
They go to the fairgrounds. They don't go out and put in walkway signs. Or anything.
Does it go to improvements at the
Yeah, it'll go to either
Academy building.
Yeah, it could.
Right.
It could. If,
so
if
any
that's,
facility that's
yeah.
On the grounds
yeah.
could be aided.
Yeah, it's perceived as a public benefit for the airport and for the community, you know. Yep.
I also got some information gathering from those folks. And so
I
heard.
Yeah,
what
and
they
actually,
were
the originals, two signed originals, are in the possession of the commissioner's office. Caleb came by and signed those yesterday, and then Lisa brought them in this morning. So
okay. Sounds good. I see no reason not to move that forward.
Great. You? Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm in favor.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a good thing. I think this is just another area where we're thinking outside the box.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a helpful thing.
You know, how many different ways can you generate? We're not just asking for money. We're generating an interest.
Exactly.
And that's what I like about this. That's what I like about Friends of the Fairgrounds. Their private deal that goes out and generates the interest in the fairgrounds, collects that money, and then they have a say when it comes to the board, the fair board. They have a representative on the fair board.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they can, yes, and that's a project we'll do. And $45,000 or whatever, they've got that money.
Yeah, in a similar manner, the three of the members of the board of this Josephine County Airport Boosters are also on the board of the Airport Advisory Committee. So,
yeah, they're pretty well connected.
Yeah, I mean, they know. Yeah, they have their fingers on the pulse, basically.
And they recognize
what's going
the need, and they'll be right there. So,
yeah, and they'll
I'm
be a public-facing
no
organization. That's why they want to have your consent to use the Josephine County name.
Sure.
I make a motion that we move this to consent calendar on next week's WBS.
Either or. You want to make a motion today to approve it, or you just want to move it to the consent calendar?
I'm okay. Let's make a motion. I'll entertain a motion. I will make the motion that we approve this MOU granting consent to drill Sheen County Airport Hoosiers to use the county thing.
Okay. And I'll second that motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And aye. So it is
now
approved. Yeah, or now we just got to sign it because we just passed it.
I have another issue I'd like to talk about if you guys have
a
moment.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
See if we can be done by 10.
You got 4.5 minutes.
4.5, okay. We have two construction projects that we'd like to move forward with on the airport itself right now. One of them is the replacement of the caretaker's residence. I think on the December 19th, Wednesday night at the Ambassador WBS, that whole project was approved conceptually by the commissioners. And so we've been working with vendors left and right. We're acting as our own general contractor. And that way we're trying to save money and move the project forward quickly so we can get it done in this calendar year. That and another project to build a maintenance facility.
My memory serves me that the actual ask was $80,000 for the caretaker's residence, and at that meeting, Commissioner Morgan moved it to, we were looking at a manufactured
structure
out there with a limit of $80,000, and Commissioner Morgan says, well, maybe we can have a stick-built house for $100,000. So we bumped it to $100,000 that night.
Yeah,
is that
we were directed to look at stick-built homes as an option, and they do exist out there. And it turns out that the lowest cost option for the completion of a caretaker residence, so that it would be all done, ready to move in, and is the stick-built home by Serendipity Homes. It's a division of I think they're called Haney Homes, but in any case, I have all the documentation. And so for the what we've done is instead of contacting an architectural firm or an engineering firm and saying, give me a plans and specification that I can advertise and send out to the whole world and say, I want to build a single family residence and I want to get it done as cheap and quick as possible, but to code, residential code for single family residences in the state of Oregon, so 6-inch walls and all that stuff. And here's the spec, and we expect to receive the bids in 30 days, and then we'll choose and we'll move forward from there. Instead, we've gone out to every website that does stick-built homes or manufactured homes, and we've said, this is what we want. Please give us a quote. And so we've received quotes for those things. There are turnkey options where the home builder or the manufactured home company will manage the project for you, and they'll bring in a guy to survey it and do the site prep and pour the concrete, and then they locate the home on it if it's a manufactured home. Similarly, the stick-built home manufacturer will do a turnkey project for you, or you can contract to have excavation, rocking, compaction, pour the foundation, the footings, and all that, and then the stick-built home is a kit. It'll be delivered as a kit, and there are companies that act as a contractor to construct it and build it, and these are recommended by the kit manufacturer. And the turnkey option turns out to be the lowest cost option, turnkey stick-built home. And that number all up is $108,000. So what I've been putting together now, we've had all of our bids in place, all of our quotes, all of our requests for quote, and all the bids for the subcomponents of all these things for over a month. And I put together a package for review and sent it to legal. And it's been there since May 1st and still there. Okay, so we did the same thing for a new maintenance shop that we need since our old maintenance shop is gone. It was sold to the smoke jumpers over at Illinois Valley Airport. So we have once again gone out to prefab metal building companies like Cleary Building and Federal Steel and General Steel and all these different things. And we've requested a quote for a 40 by 80 shop building with 3 12-foot by 12-foot rolled-up doors and some office space inside at one end. Okay, so 3,200 square feet, 40
four
by
doors.
80. Three. 12 by 12 roll-up doors, basically garage door opener operation kind of a thing. And, you know, electrical, gas for the wintertime, insulated building, so there's no weeping and, you know, leakage and that kind of thing. And so it also turns out that the lowest cost option for that is a Cleary building that's going to be delivered as a kit to on-site and then constructed by a company that works with Cleary, a local guy.
Is it steel structure with metal outside? Or?
It's a wooden pole barn structure with metal clad.
You get an estimate at all from an outfit called Sprung Structures?
Yes, that was the first estimate I got.
Okay.
Yeah, and I looked at them very closely.
I've heard that they could put these things up in day after tomorrow. And
right.
That type of a thing, but I didn't know.
Yeah, no, they were the first company I did. I followed your recommendation. I did go talk to them, and I have all that information. But it turns out that even they don't recommend these for permanent structures. They are designed to be
as a temporary.
That's right. Like, we'll put up a whole airline terminal at SFO for you to handle.
Denver.
Sure, and they've been at Denver. They did it at Dulles. I mean, I lived in Dulles when they were doing it there, and they've been around a long time, and it's a really good product, but it's got a 20-year life. And they design it to be either
I've seen them. Put up casinos in the front of it. That's just till the tribe can earn enough money to build the real thing.
Yes. Uh-huh. So the option that we've looked at, and now I was talking about the caretaker residence on the one hand. On the other hand, now I'm talking about this maintenance shop that we need built out there. We have a site located for it. It's already been environmentally vetted because it was part of our West Triangle hangar area, and the cultural, you know, Indian tribes went over it with a fine-tooth comb and everything else. So we're good to move forward from an environmental standpoint. And it turns out, for purposes of that building, that Peterson Construction, Barry Peterson Excavation, who's going to build the access road to it, it's going to be compacted rock and 12 feet wide, and we'll have a big 10 or 15 foot apron all the way around this building. It'll be raised up above grade level. It'll be 100% compaction, and then the structure of the building are built up 6x6s, basically small versions of telephone poles, and they drive these 6 to 8 feet into the ground. Okay, and that forms all the posts, corner posts, and all the side posts. So they're 10 foot on center, 12 foot on center.
Make the doors work.
Yep, make the doors work. And then they have wooden truss structure and cross beams, et cetera, inside. And then the whole thing is insulated, and then metal roof, outside. Yeah, outsides.
And we'll have inside finish.
The inside is going to be unfinished, just the bare insulation, but it's the white vinyl back. And
now I noticed in the chatter back and forth, there's no sanitary facility. There's no toilet, no bathroom, or anything.
Correct. We're going to have a blue lagoon that we'll park out there outside the building.
Okay. I was wondering, just me thinking out loud, you can bury a septic tank and have it pumped once a month on a routine
basis.
And I was thinking that, put a small bathroom in there with gray water and sewage and pump it into it and just run it into, bury a tank.
That's our plan.
A drain field or anything off.
Nope, I agree with you.
No environmental assessment needed, I don't think.
You need a permit from DEQ.
But you're not.
And that's why it's not in the original plan.
I was just thinking then, because we would have that in there for when we eventually, which looks like in maybe 5 years or something, we hook on to this sewer system and we get that thing all finalized. We're not having to jackhammer a slab up.
Yeah, that's what I was
and heading put in towards. Stuff yeah, we
make
know
a future provision.
And as long as you can set it up, I can't imagine one maintenance worker, two maintenance workers, filling up a 560-gallon sewage tank. And if you do, you put an alarm on every time you pump, and you get clear water just on their way back to the thing. When you pump that out, once every 2 months or 3 months for $50.
Well, we all are in agreement about all of that. We wanted to get started on this project immediately. And by the way, the building is built on top of this compacted rock, raised grade level, above grade level platform. And then when the building is complete, then there is rebar laid down and the foundation or the slab is poured after the building is built. it's an interesting concept. And we've gone and toured a few of these buildings that are in Merlin and in downtown Grants Pass. They're excellent. And the cost is half for the concrete work and of doing a slab with footings.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you have to be super precise when you're laying your foundation for a metal building, because these things come prefabbed, and you've got these giant things with you know, 8 bolt holes, and they got it laid down, and it's got to be in the perfect spot. It has to be within a quarter inch.
Right.
And so this avoids all that, and so it's reflected in the cost. Here's my challenge. I'm being told now, and I've given these packages, one of them to legal to review, that you're not in compliance with our procurement policy. This is a public benefit or a public facility that you're building, and you need to issue an RFP and put it in the Federal Register and the Commerce Business Daily and get all your bids and then proceed
right.
that way.
Contracting.
Yeah, so I'm trying to avoid all that by having my ops manager act as a general contractor on the job, which he's absolutely capable of doing. And I have pointed out to Wally that the individual components that we have asked for people to bid on, we need an access road built, we need excavation and rocking and compacting, we need trenching for
utilities.
Eventually for water and for gas and electricity, okay, so all that's being done, and for septic. That's all being done, and it's all been bid by several people, each of these things. And then we got several bids for prefab buildings. What's the cost of having a kit delivered, boom, on the ground right next to the build site? What's the cost for the general who's going to come in and put it up, the contractor who's going to build the building? What's
so
the cost for
him? You're just making multi-contracts
so
as not to exceed a given amount of money.
Well, that's correct. Now, for the entire project of the maintenance building, it's less than $200,000. The building itself is... about $83,000, I think, for the kit and the construction of the building, and the other components, the plumbing, you know, lay the gas line out, lay the electrical, and all that stuff. That's all, you know, forms the rest of it, the balance of it. There's nothing in there that's over $100,000. So I was expecting to have a review by legal. I won't say a quick review, but I mean, I know they're busy, but. And congratulations, by the way, on the settlement with PAC Power. But I want to get it approved to move my R&R forward, which is a report and recommendation. Okay, it's essentially I want to come to you with an R&R that says, hey, I've jumped through all the hoops. This is a legal procurement. We followed all the informal procurement policy requirements, et cetera, and I want to get this thing built.
What if it comes back and said this is not a legal procurement, this is not following contract? I mean, if we ask for, hey, let's hurry up and get this thing done, we're assuming that legal doesn't find it fly anyway.
Oh, well, so, I mean, I want to go through legal. I want to work with the legal process. Exactly, yeah. What I'm saying is I don't believe that this falls into the category of a overall large procurement where I have to issue an RFP for a maintenance shop and then let somebody else bid the entire project start to finish.
Right. I'm wondering where definitions comes in.
Right.
Now, if it's the terminal where people come and go on your planes and this and that, and the other, this is not open to the public in any way, shape, or form. That's also true. It is basically, in other words, the public is not going to bring their side draft mower in there and say, here, Jason, you want to work on that on site. There's no public access to that at all.
Yeah, there won't be.
It serves a public function in the fact that it is maintenance to the airport, but it, you know, and the public is paying for it.
Yes.
However, I don't view it as like the terminal where the public walks in and says, "Hey, when can I get my plane fueled or anything of that sort?"
Exactly.
Or the fueling station is public access. This is like
it's a utility building.
It's to serve the airport, but it is by no means public.
I don't feel the need to draw that distinction even. I don't think we need to. Yeah, but I mean
it's an argument in favor of.
Well, you're moving toward the realm of common sense, and that's kind of a dangerous territory there.
So what we need to do going from here, I think we I'll talk to Wally and Darren can talk. talked to Wally to say, you know, what's up with this?
Yeah.
And it's just like anything else. It's like this right here. I know what the international driveway code says, right. 600 feet between driveways. But is that, does that apply here?
Yeah, yeah.
I know what.
I mean, I've applied for and received ODOT approach clearances in the past.
But I just want to make sure that we're comfortable.
I know what that's all about.
Because we're still Josephine County, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. I don't want
very true.
Somebody from out there going, whoa.
Well, Wally's trying to prevent.
On this.
Yeah, that's right.
It should have been. You know, I'm from Wichita, Kansas, and I build maintenance shops for airports all over the world, and I wasn't allowed to bid on this because it never hit the public. I don't want that.
Right.
You know, because there are people that just lie in wait.
Yep.
Looking for us to step in the ointment, and yep. I don't want to do that.
Yep.
So let's, if legal can pull it off, if legal says it's okay, mm-hmm. I'm all for that.
Sure.
But I don't want to do something that puts us at risk liability-wise right. as a yep. county, because we're the guys that are going to get, and girls,
yeah.
that
yeah.
are going to get hammered if somebody says you circumvented the system and we allowed that.
Well, I realize, too, that airports-related contracts are under scrutiny at the moment because of our dispute with our fuel supplier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at that as another one of these sort of gray area issues where, first of all, the contract, you know, a contract's okay. not...
Let's not get into that.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Let's stay out of that.
All right. But, I mean, you know, the amount of money we're going to spend for fuel is budgeted. The budget's approved. I buy it in small increments all throughout the year.
I'd say that. The whole subject yeah. needs to
okay.
yeah.
rest.
Yeah. yeah.
Let's go back to maintenance sheds.
Yeah, so I basically what I want is I want to be able to move forward with this.
Yeah.
Okay. We've requested more than three quotes from qualified mm-hmm. individuals in the local area, you know, for each of these components of the job, and I just want to prevent having to spend probably close to twice as much money and take twice as much time to yeah. build a spec and put it up.
We're faced with yeah. everything, Larry, because you all of a sudden you get somebody involved. And it's twice, 2 to 3 times what it really should cost.
Yep.
And what you want is protect. You're trying to protect the taxpayer dollars.
Well, we're spending public money, and I'm just trying to be efficient.
That doesn't matter when it comes to contractor dollars. Yeah. So I think give us a little bit of time to work on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Neither one of us this commissioner is not opposed to what you're doing.
Sure.
But I don't know the legalities of it. I do wish, and I don't know if it's something you can just add in there to find out what a septic tank would take. You bury the septic tank and put a small bathroom in the corner.
Well, we're going to do that. I mean, but we were just going to, we're putting in the application for the septic, okay? But that's going to take 6 months or a year to get.
Right.
And I want to move forward with the building. That's why I didn't include it in this initial package.
But your infrastructure going, I want you to put the riser yep. in for the toilet, and the yep. plumbing in for the sink.
It'll all be plumbed in.
A little 5-gallon hot water heater underneath the counter and so on and so forth. So again, yep. wash your hands in there. I think it's a safety issue because you've got to understand that almost every
eye wash.
You have to have an eye washing station. And that ain't the blue room outside.
I know. I've got eyewash stations all over the airport that I had to buy and put in, and I have to change them every 6 months, and it's because we don't have running water.
You don't have running water. And that's what I'm saying. I think there's a safety issue with it.
Well, okay. And the traditional putting out an RFP and open bids is not the only way to do things in Oregon. Oregon does allow preference contractors. They do allow other ways, so hopefully legal will be able to find a path for you. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
You bet.
Okay, guys, and we'll move forward.
Thanks for coming in.
Yep, you bet.
And that, yeah, MOU, we already did today, right? We passed.
Yep,
hold on.
All right.
Appreciate
good, thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
See you later.
That puts us at number two, other business. Is there anything else that the board would like to discuss or address today?
I think when are we scheduled to do the Allen Creek Road with the city of Grants Pass? They were going to make a determination on...
It's soon. I saw it in the newspaper, but I'm not sure when it is.
My wife said, oh, you're going to talk about that. I said, what does the paper say?
June 5th.
When is
June 5th.
June 5th.
June 5th. Okay, good.
Yep, so it's out there a little ways.
I've got some additional information.
Yeah?
Pretty exciting.
Well, but, thanks for the tease again. Okay, huh? I'll see you. Thanks for the tease. I'll see you on the 5th.
Tease, yeah. After the break.
After the break. Yeah, really. Next week's show.
We'll continue this after the break. Tune in next week.
Don't touch that dial. Matters from commissioners. Last item. Nope. Is anything else to share today? Okay.
I'm going.
Well, then let's end this meeting at 10:15.
45 minutes of absolute.